Thank you again, David, for joining us. So now we're into the December journey. For those who are just joining us, this is David Helps. He is the Chief of Staff at the Department of Health and Human Services, the Project Management Office specifically, yes. Right?
Yep.
I always love doing the introduction because, you know, it's a nice long government title.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, we were just talking before the show started that David Helps and I go back about 13 years. That was before the wisdom started.
The wisdom. All the wisdom in here. All that gray.
So we're going to continue our review of the book here, by John C. Maxwell, called Developing the Leader in You, mm-hmm. or Within You,
yes.
2.0, not 1.0. So times changed, so they updated the book. We're going into the third and fourth chapters mm-hmm. through the month of December. Mm-hmm. And as usual, we have our little cheat sheet here to make sure that we stay on target. We're trying to keep this to about 20 minutes. I know if you and I ramble,
we can do that
2 hours later. All right, so the first session that we have going on here for December is the foundation of leadership, which is character. So interesting character. So now we're going to start talking about some of the within stuff, a little bit less of the technical aspects of leadership, and now some of the character. Now times change, right? Society changes. So I'm real curious to hear some of the stories you have, how things have changed over time. What are some of the points that Mr. Maxwell here makes that have been timeless?
Yeah,
there are some timeless things, and with that, kind of starting out with the problems, you know, the things that we need to look out for. So you're in a leadership position. You're doing great, but beware the Ides of March, right? It's kind of beware of those things that are going to come out and get you.
Oh, yeah. What do they say? Character is what we exhibit when no one's looking.
Yeah, there
is
you
that
go.
What they say?
I like that. Say that again for the record.
Yeah.
Speaking. So to kind of guide the discussion here, there was an interview that John did with Pope Francis of the Roman Catholic Church some years ago. And basically, just to kind of put the picture around this, this is what Pope Francis said that he said to his cardinals and archbishops, bishops, if I'm saying any of that wrong, all of our Catholic people, forgive me. but I think it's the cardinals or college of cardinals.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's the leaders of the church. Mm-hmm. So, and not a small organization, right? Only, what, 1 or 2 billion people or something like that?
Only.
So they know something about leadership and running an organization that big. And so he was going through, and what he did is he kind of gave a speech called The Diseases of Leadership. Mm-hmm. The Diseases. So kind of where we're going to start here. I love the examples you've been providing us in November. Yeah. So gonna dive into what are some of your stories. Again, we're going to change the names. We're going to protect the guilty and innocent. So the first one that he has in here, just to jump right in, is the first one is the enemy of humility, which he describes as thinking that we're immortal, immune, or irreplaceable. Or indispensable. You know, now that I'm in a leadership role, you can't get rid of me or this whole thing comes falling down. Now, I know some people on the ground level that think that, right?
Yes.
I think I may have even been guilty of that myself a time or two when I started getting into...
Yeah, at some point in my... I have definitely been guilty of that.
So what do you think are your thoughts? When somebody's in a leadership role and they start to think that they're indispensable, their humility has just checked out, and now they just think that, you know, they're the king or the queen of the world and you can't get rid of them.
Yep.
You ever run into this in your role?
Oh, yes. Yes. And for this, you know, when I think about this type of statement, you know, I'm looking at it from the perspective of, let's just look at the businesses that we've seen recently. The ones that have collapsed that no one thought would have collapsed. Because they literally from the top thought they were indispensable. And they have just struggled with the times that have hit us of recently, right? I mean, you can look back since 08 and look at all the things that have actually hit companies and leaders and project managers from the left field. And when you look at that and when you start thinking that you're indispensable, that's when you start thinking that, you know, there's nothing else for you to learn, there's nothing else for you to do. And those types of leaders will become stagnant. I've seen it happen time and time again, and I've seen other leaders come in and just walk right past them in the pecking order, because they got complacent and stagnant with the concept of I'm indispensable. What are you going to do?
Avoid that though. Like, so you get comfortable in a position, you can do that in almost anything. But if you are ruling the world essentially, or at least you're a professional, how do you avoid this particular disease?
This one's really difficult, because once you get this in your head, it's hard to break. But the one thing that you need to try to do to armor yourself from getting to this point is to always remind yourself that in today's world of technology, in today's world of business changes and mergers and acquisitions and all of that stuff, you always have something else you can learn and something else you can do to continue to improve yourself, from not just a perspective of personally, but understanding what's changing in your industry and growing in that, because all industries are currently going through flux, and they have been since the early 2000s. I mean, technology has changed so much of what we do. And if you think that you're untouchable and you can't do any wrong, and you don't take the time to learn what's coming your way and what's making adjustments, you're going to get stagnant, and you're going to get passed over by the person who comes in and says, hey, I learned about this and I learned that, and we could shift here and move into that. And you've got to start reminding yourself. And I tell this to all my classes, all the classes that I teach, I tell them, if you go into certain industries and you go into certain areas, you need to understand that you're a lifetime learner. You're dedicating yourself to being a lifetime learner. That's Project Management 101, because it changes all the time, and it matures, and everything matures. And go ahead and put that armor on you to say, you know what? I never know everything. That'll help with that.
I don't know how to help with that. I think that's good advice. Mm-hmm. It's constantly reviewing your own situation, mm-hmm. never thinking that that's it. You're at the pinnacle. You're done.
My staff will tell you all the time. They'll ask me questions stuff, and I'll be like, I don't know. I'll have to go research that out to look into it. I don't know. And I tell them, I don't know everything. I know a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. but I don't know everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
good. That's a good armor against that one.
All right. Well, the next one in line is excessive busyness. Now, I know you don't know anything about this, right? You don't know anything about what it is to be busy. But the disease basically leads to stress, being mm-hmm. agitated, mm-hmm. And how in the world? So first off, I tell that joke, but for those who don't know David, this guy's busy from 12:01 a.m. until midnight.
I get in trouble with my wife all the time. In fact, my wife the other day, she was like, you have nothing else to do. You finish what you started, and then...
That's it. So, you have an accountability partner.
Oh, yes.
That you call
yes.
my love, right? So, excessive busyness. First, I mean, once you're in that realm and you have somebody mm-hmm. to say, to flag it, great. Mm-hmm. What about the lead up to it? You know, how do you recognize when you've gone from really being productive and working to now, I'm just so busy, I have no time for anything?
So, for me, honestly, one of the things that I had to do to actually listen to what my wife was telling me mm-hmm. was I had to do my own time audit on me. Ooh, okay. And what did I do? So I literally sat down and broke out the week and broke out my days and just sat down and said, what are all the things that I'm constantly doing? So all the weekly meetings, the monthly meetings, all of those went on there during the work hours, all the things that I'm doing after work, all the things that I'm doing before. So I literally sat down and went through a time audit of myself.
Yeah.
And by doing that, I looked at it and I was like, wow, no wonder I'm stressed. No wonder I don't sleep well, because I'm literally go nonstop.
Are you an advocate of block scheduling? Do you find that to be helpful at all?
Yes.
Now, why is block, for those who don't know what block scheduling is, can you walk through it with them? Why, what do you do? What is it?
So time boxing, it's an agile technique, right? It's basically an agile project management technique. But time boxing is really where you're sitting there and you're time boxing and structuring everything that you have to do. So if you have a meeting, then you're going to schedule a meeting. And if it's a 30-minute meeting, you're going to keep that to 30 minutes. You're going to get the agenda. It keeps you precise. So you're not going to come in because you only have 30 minutes. You're definitely going to hold. And you use your phone, you put the timer on, and you stick by it. And if you have, I even time box my desk, just desk work time. So if I have a report that I need to work on, I'll literally put on my calendar 30 minutes to an hour. Time box.
Blocks it.
And blocks it, blocks my calendar, and that is what I dedicate my focus and my time to. Okay. And time boxing is all about that. It's about setting those parameters of I'm going to start working on this at this time, I'm going to finish it at this time. And if I don't finish the whole thing, that's fine. That's the purpose of time boxes. Because I have time boxes every day of things that I need to do desk-wise. So if I don't get that report done today, but it's due in 2 days, that's fine because tomorrow at that same time, I've time boxed the same amount of work. Yeah. So doing the time boxing helps you stay focused, and it can also help you expedite some of your processes, because if you give 100% of your focus to that item for that length of time, you would be surprised how quickly you actually get done.
Okay. That
sounds like... Because procrastination...
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I love to procrastinate. Yeah. Ask anybody who knows me. That's one of my weaknesses. I love waiting till the last minute.
Yeah.
It's something about waiting until it's a dire emergency to really get me to focus. I don't know what it is. All right. So the next one is mental and emotional petrification. And what they're talking about there is becoming heartless. Now, I find this one particularly funny because this hits everyone. So you think about it, he's talking to a bunch of religious leaders, and he says, be careful you don't become heartless.
Yes.
That one is good. So you ever meet a leader or know a leader that just suddenly just didn't care about, and from a project management point of view, this is the example is you get through the project, you're successful, and then you look behind yourself and there's a line of dead bodies. Because you've just forgotten about the people, you've become completely heartless.
Correct.
So what do you have
you,
there?
You run them. You run them so hard that they collapse.
And what happens at the end of the project for you?
Well, see, the thing is that a lot of times this occurs when the leader has run into obstacles. After obstacles, after obstacles, and they get frustrated and they get aggravated because there's parameters that might be put in place that are unrealistic to begin with, and they're trying to run and run and run, and the problem is it hits so hard that they just become callous and frustrated and aggravated, and what you have to do from a leadership perspective is you have to continuously look at what it is that you're actually trying to accomplish and what it is you're trying to do, and make sure that the people that you're leading are okay.
A little bit of emotional intelligence seems to be involved here, right?
Huge for stopping heartlessness.
All right, and I guess this one kind of goes next. So excessive planning and functionalism, what they're talking about here is becoming inflexible.
Yes.
So you have a plan, you stick to it, no changes allowed. I guess this will be the opposite in the project management world of Agile.
It's a complete opposite.
Because Agile is like, bring it on, we love change. But what about that leader or that project manager that becomes completely inflexible? We're going to stick to the process, stick to this. I don't want to have any discussion about any other option.
We've got to start training our leaders not to get here. because the one guarantee, and I mean, you know this more than just as much as I do, really, is that the only guarantee in life, in projects, in anything, in business, is change.
Exactly.
You can't get this way in today's society. Used to be you could. Today you can't. There's too much change going on.
Right. All right. Well, let's kind of pick up the pace here. So yeah. we're gonna go a little bit quick.
And
let's do this one in sort of a little bit of a flash game, because I you and I could talk about this one for hours, right?
We could talk about all these things, each of these things, for an hour.
It's always easier to find the negative leaders, isn't it? It's like they stand out so much more in our mind, mm-hmm. right? Something about this would be like when your father beat you when you're young and says, "I do it because I love you."
Because I love you.
All right, so we're gonna go. I'm gonna say what Pope Francis said, and kind of describe it, and then what will be your counteraction for it?
Okay.
Counteraction. If you have an example,
again,
we're relating this into project management. So it's this one, leadership Alzheimer's disease. So what he's talking about here is forgetting to nurture the people on your team, to mentor them, mm-hmm. and just thinking, you know, the typical project management book will tell you that you're not really caring about your staff.
Yes.
You put in your skills request matrix, you get those skills out, and now you're expecting people to show up ready to play.
Yep.
How do you continue to make sure that you're still nurturing those people in I don't know, 30 seconds or less?
What you do is you continue to work on building and fostering the relationships with them to understand them fully. That really comes back to having one-on-ones with the people who work for you on a regular basis.
Right.
And getting to know them and what their tolerance limits are.
So this kind of flies in the face of some of the stuff you mm-hmm. see in certifications. Because for project managers, again, it's like we ask for the talent, you deliver the talent. The functional manager is going to worry about all that. Are you on the right seat of the bus kind of stuff? Do you have?
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't live by that alone.
Absolutely. All right. Ever run into a project manager that is distracted by their own title?
Yes. 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 Look at me. Yeah. What you have to do there is work with, especially if you're in a mentor position, mm-hmm. work with getting them to realize that, goes back to that first one, you're not the end-all be-all.
Mm-hmm.
You are the what are they called? You're
the conductor.
The conductor. You're the conductor of it. Your job is to make sure that things are flowing together.
Right.
It's not about you. Everybody else is making the music.
Right.
You're just making sure that they're hitting when they're supposed to.
Right. Excellent. Okay. And then I don't know if he just came up with these words because something's funny. Existential schizophrenia. So living hypocritical double lives.
Do as I say, not as I do. Do as I say, not as I do. That's the mentality, right?
Yeah.
Is that I'm going to do this, I'm going to say that, but when I say this, I'm actually going to do that. And then this leader has problems with people following them because how they interact does not match up with what it is that they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And they're going to lose followers very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Once you spot a hypocrite, you don't
want to. Oh, yeah.
But I love it. Existential schizophrenia.
It's awesome.
The next two, almost to me, kind of can be combined.
Yes.
If you disagree, let me know. But cowardliness and what I guess a pope would explain as the butt kiss. But he doesn't say butt kiss, right?
Yeah.
I would be non-pope.
Yes.
So, well, what he called it is gossiping, grumbling, and backbiting, which I guess is everywhere.
Yes, it is.
You know, church is not exempt from that.
No.
But the idolizing supervisors and basically just giving your supervisors all the praise in the world, which mm-hmm. is a lot. This is the butt kiss.
Mm-hmm.
So that they will bring you along.
Yes.
Now, this one sounds like these two things are two-way streets.
Correct.
If I'm gossiping and you're giving me the time of day, or if I'm idolizing you and you're giving me the time of day, rewarded behavior is repeated behavior.
Correct.
So how do you, as a leader, make sure, one, that people aren't doing it to you, but also that you're not doing this with others?
First, you need to understand what these really mean, and what they, like, your description was perfect, but what you got to do is you have to understand that we're all human. We all make mistakes. None of us are infallible, and because of that, we have to look at what's going on, and we have to look at what's going on in other people's lives that are either ahead of us or behind us, and understand how that affects us, and how idolizing or how gossiping about somebody can have a massive impact on the overall work that really needs to get done. And when you spend a lot of time here, you're not spending time on actual execution of work. Yeah. And that's a problem.
Yes, yes. All right, so then the next two, again, it's kind of like they could be combined here. So indifference to others and downcast face is what he's talking about. But what it is about being selfish, in other words. So I'm here and you're there.
So
when I decide that you're worthy to participate in this decision, I'll let you know.
Yes. Yes. And I think we've both had managers like that at some point in our time. And what you have to realize here is that without the people that you're saying, hey, you're here, I'm here, without them, you're not there.
That's right.
You're not where you are.
Good point.
Without them. So be careful of that, because when you do that, you are actually harming yourself as a leader. And that is what we can't. You can't. If you find yourself in here, you will not be a leader for long.
And this is our last segue. So we'll close this segment with this, right? Yeah. So I'm going to group in the last three, because it talks about basically creating a world that you control who comes in and out. It says hoarding, closed circles, extravagance. I'm so important. Look at me. Don't you want to be more like me?
Yep.
It's almost like a prosperity mindset that I have it because I deserve it. And if you want to be like me, then copy me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's one thing to be an example, another thing to throw it in people's faces and say, I'm an example to you.
Right.
And you watch me. So again, it's like I'm just imagining what a pope would look like talking to a lot of very, very high ranking religious leaders. But again, in project management, do the same thing.
Yes.
There used to be this old school mentality of, if I protect everything in my job and only I know it, then that's job security.
Yep.
So what's the reality today?
And if you only have the same set of people around you, then you have nothing to worry about, because you always have the same idea. The counter to this is diverse groups, and the counter to this is transparency. So having a diverse group around you, and I can do a whole segment on diversity. Having a diverse group around you is what is going to make the end products of what it is you're trying to do and accomplish a more robust and better solution for what it is you're trying to solve. And when you try to contain too much, it's the problem that you're going to run into is that when you get out, your product gets out, some of that stuff that you were hoping to accomplish never saw the light of day, because you still have it contained.
Yep.
You didn't let it out enough for people to make the right decisions on how to implement that in the solution.
Awesome. All right, so that wraps up Pope Francis's interview, and I'm sure it was a whole lot more than 20 or 25 minutes.
Well, he was pointed.
It was pretty good. So next week, next session, we're going to talk about character value statements. So we're going to kind of flip this around. Instead of focusing on the things that leaders need to watch out for, we're going to focus on the things that leaders need to be heading towards.
Correct.
So thank you. Look forward to the next discussion.
Definitely.
Y'all go ahead and join us again in our next session, where we're going to talk about character value statements. So anyway, hope you enjoyed this session, and we'll see you next time.